From the heart of Washington State, you are listening to The Mountain and the Word, an audio podcast show from the Mount St. Helens Creation Center, featuring news, views, and information with a biblical and scientific perspective. The Mountain and the Word is produced and presented by creation speaker Paul Taylor and is available for download from our website, mshcreationcenter.org.
Hello and welcome to The Mountain and the Word. It's great to have you listening to us. I'm actually recording this particular part of this programme in the evening on Christmas Day, and it's been a lovely day today. I've had some marvellous fellowship with people and got back to the place where I'm staying, and I thought it would be good to record this particular show because it's been on my mind. I like to be able to answer people's questions, and I've mentioned that before a few times as I've broadcast things. And I got a question a little while ago and I haven't really got around to answering it. Somebody emailed me and wanted to know about soft tissue in bones. So I thought it would be good to address that. So that's mainly what this is about. But before we get into that particular part of the recording, can I just emphasise that this programme is a ministry of the Mount St. Helens Creation Centre. That's mshcreationcentre.org. At the close of the programme, I want to mention a few things about the ministry and ask for your prayers for the ministry. But for now, let's just sit back and I'll try and explain to you a little bit about the soft tissue discoveries in dinosaur bones and what they seem to be meaning to us. Well, I recently got an email from somebody asking me about some news that's been out. There's a research group at North Carolina State University who've been doing some research into soft tissue in dinosaur fossils. And I probably need to set the scene for this research first before I comment on it. Correspondent who emailed me wanted me to comment on the particular news item which was published on December the 1st, and I'll come to that in a minute. But I think I need to give a little bit of background first. Many of you are probably aware that that there has been discovery in recent years of soft tissue present in dinosaur fossils. The paleontologist Mary Schweitzer and her team found this to be the case in some fossilized Tyrannosaurus bones, or rather really non-fossilized bones, to be perfectly honest. But there was evidence of soft tissue and the possibility of red blood cells and so on. And many of us, and I think quite rightly, would see this as being a vindication of creationist principles. Now, you need to understand that I'm constantly trying to bang the drum to show people that we don't believe in creationism because of these sort of scientific finds. Because if we based everything on evidence, there's always evidence both ways, as you're going to see that in just a moment. What's the important issue here is how evidence is interpreted. But it's the interpretation of evidence anyway that's important in this particular issue. You see, blood cells should not be able to survive for millions of years, not even a few hundred years, really. These things just should not happen. It should not be possible for these things to have survived for the periods of time which evolutionary paleontologists suggest. So there was quite some interest in this. Obviously, creationists were interested in it. Maybe some creationists were a little bit naive and saying, look, this is the magic bullet, the silver bullet that proves that evolution's wrong, creation's true. Well, you know, when this news first came out, I did think, well, it's not going to be the case, is it? The people who've discovered this are committed to an evolutionary worldview. Their starting point, their worldview, is unbiblical to begin with. So yes, they've done the important scientific research and they've got these answers. Now, they're going to interpret this within an evolutionary framework. So what you find is, instead of saying, well, the age of this particular fossil is, I don't know, let's say 65 million years old, that's what we think, but there are blood vessels in it. These blood vessels cannot survive 65 million years old, therefore this fossil is not as old as we previously thought. That would seem to be a logical conclusion, and one that many naive creationists expected that everyone would make, in the hope probably that people would fall on their knees, repent, and immediately become saved. But that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. And because people will interpret things through their own worldview. So what I thought was going to be the case, and I've been proved right, is that people would start to look for some mechanism whereby they thought that these blood vessels, which they previously thought could not survive millions of years, they're going to find a mechanism, or try and develop a mechanism, however imaginary, that suggests that these things can actually last for millions and millions of years, so that they can retain their existing timescale. Because the concept of deep time is very, very important to an evolutionist, because that's the way that you can try and explain things in terms of a worldview which is unbiblical. So I thought that that was what was going to happen. Now, this particular news item then from the North Carolina State University would seem to bear that out. And the headline on the news item, this is not the sort of learned publication, this is the news item, the news release that they have made, from the North Carolina State University's website, ncsu.edu. And the date is dated December the 1st, 2015. The headline is, Researchers Confirm Original Blood Vessels in 80-million-year-old Fossil. Now, before I read on any further, I think I also need at this point to remind you of a technique that I've been trying to develop, that I've been trying to explain to people about looking at such news items as this. And of course, the technique is explained in detail in my latest book, Where Birds Eat Horses. And it's not to line my pockets that I try and recommend people to get this book. It's because I think this is an important technique to try and see the worldview bias that there is in evolutionary articles, textbooks, and popular style TV programs and that sort of thing. So it's a technique whereby I get people to go through articles like this and to look for the fuzzy words and the magic words and the words of worldview bias. What do I mean by that? Well, the fuzzy words and magic words, these are definitions that come from my friend Mike Riddle of the Creation Training Institute. And fuzzy words mean words that they carry a considerable amount of doubt with them. They're deliberately designed to carry doubt, so that they're not going to, so the writers are not going to be tied down to something that's wrong later. For example, in this particular article that I'm going to come to in a minute, one of the postdoctoral researchers looking at the helping with this particular research starts a comment by saying, "Paleoproteomics is a challenging pursuit." It's a very, very interesting comment that she's made there. It's a challenging pursuit because, of course, there are difficulties with it, is what she's admitting to. And those are the sort of difficulties that we need to analyse as we look at this particular article. Those are fuzzy words then, words that can cast some doubt on things. The magic words are things where you think something is clearly impossible, but it becomes possible when you give the concept of millions of years. Now, this whole article really falls under that heading, because obviously we've looked at this and we've said, well, these soft tissues simply cannot last for millions of years. Soft tissues degenerate. All the experiments show that, all the research shows that. Every condition that we have, that we look at in the laboratory, shows that these sort of soft tissues do not last. They deteriorate. They can't possibly last for millions of years. So What they're doing then is looking for a mechanism that says, well, there are millions of years here, yet the blood vessels remain. Therefore, there is a mechanism that must exist whereby these things persist over millions of years instead of decaying. Now, I hope you understand the import of that, because nobody can actually go back in time and do an experiment to say, look, this shows how this degeneration of the soft tissue is slowed down. Nobody is doing that. Instead, this is a thought experiment. They're taking two concepts that they think are both true and therefore trying to reinterpret them in that lines. The two things, therefore, they think are both true are, one, under normal conditions, this soft tissue deteriorates, and number two, yet this soft tissue is millions of years old because it comes from a fossil that's millions of years old. Now, you see, to me, the logical conclusion would be, well, let's have a look at which one of those isn't demonstrated in the laboratory, and that's the age of the fossil, therefore that one must be wrong. But instead, their worldview requires that there must be millions of years of these fossils. So that's a given. It's a given that it has to be true for people with a deep time evolutionary worldview. Therefore, they're searching for an interpretation. That interpretation is not real, it's not demonstrable in the laboratory, but it becomes possible because there have to be the millions of years. And that's the problem. This is a thought experiment, therefore it's not an actual real life laboratory experiment. This is the key that we need to understand here. The third type of words that I get people to look at are the words of worldview bias. And the article has a lot of examples of worldview bias. Now, I think you may want to have a look at this article, and of course I've written about how to analyse articles like this in Where Birds Eat Horses, and you'll see some worked examples in the appendix, but you can also get this particular worksheet, this particular article. I've downloaded and I've put it together into a worksheet under the terms of fair use, so that you can analyze it, and I've actually shown how I would analyze it using this fuzzy word analysis technique. So you can get this article from our website, which is mshcreationcenter.org. Remember, MSH stands for Mount St. Helens. That's mshcreationcenter.org. So just go and have a look and follow the links at the top, and you'll find this particular article so you can download it in PDF form. If you don't want to see my sort of answer scheme of how I would highlight it, then just print out the first page and try and not to look at the other pages and do the analysis for yourself. But if you want to have a look at my highlights, then I've got those on the subsequent pages. Okay, so let's have a look at the article then. Now, as I said, the headline is "Researchers Confirm Original Blood Vessels in 80 Million Year Old Fossil." Well, you see, straight away in the headline, there is an example of worldview bias. They confirm original blood vessels. That's fine. I'm happy with that bit. They're confirming that these blood vessels are original, but it's an 80 million year old fossil. How can you possibly say it's 80 million years old? You see, ages should be dated. The way that people want to do it is to date these things by a physical process to measure how that physical process changes. Well, an obvious physical process would be the decay, the deterioration of the blood vessels. And that, of course, would lead you to confirm that the fossil is nowhere near 80 million years old. But you see, they have to pick and choose. They're not going to use that particular measure because they already have an a priori opinion. They've already got this basis that they have to believe that the fossil is 80 million years old for other reasons. So the article goes on to say that they've confirmed these blood vessel-like structures in an 80 million year old hadrosaur fossil, and that it's nothing to do with contaminants, and they say that their findings add to the growing body of evidence that structures like blood vessels and cells can persist over millions of years. Well, what's the body of evidence that these structures can persist over millions of years? Well, this is the growing body of evidence. The growing body of evidence is that they have these blood vessels in fossils, and they start by believing that the fossils must be millions of years old. Therefore, the blood vessels can persist. Do you see the logic? And That is actually sound logic, because you can have sound logic that leads to a wrong conclusion if one of your premises is wrong. Okay, so you start with these two premises. The blood vessels are genuine. The fossil is 80 million years old. Therefore, the blood vessels can persist over millions of years. Now, that is logically sound. The reason why I'm saying it's wrong is not because it's illogical. Many times when I'm looking at evolutionary things, I'm telling you that these things are illogical. This is logically sound. The reason why I'm saying it's wrong is because one of the premises is wrong. And the premise that the fossil is millions of years old is wrong. And we can go into why that's the case, you know, and we've rehearsed this many, many times. And it would really be going off on a bunny trail if I start to talk about radiometric dating at the moment. I've written about this before, and you've heard other people talking about it. And I'm sure we'll come back to this, and we'll do a whole program on this subject so that you can get this. But let's just stick to one subject at the moment. Just take it from me that there are good reasons why we don't accept these radiometric dating methods. That they are giving answers based on premises. There's nothing wrong with the actual science involved in measuring the amount of radioactive materials. It's to do with the assumptions that they make about what happens to those particular radioactive substances. Okay. So if I look at the next paragraph, they say that this particular paleontologist is called Dr. Tim Cleland, and he demineralized a piece of leg bone from, it's a very difficult word to pronounce this, let me try and go through it carefully, Brachylophosaurus canadensis. Brachylophosaurus canadensis. And he says this is a 30-foot-long hadrosaur that roamed around what is now Montana about 80 million years ago. Okay, now once again, you're going to see that there is a word of worldview bias there. He starts with the assumption that this hadrosaur was there 80 million years ago. As I'm saying, this research should be done the other way around. They should look at the rates that the blood vessels decay and then use that to date the fossil. But instead, they start with this predetermined idea the fossil must be that old, therefore we'll look at everything else in that light. So you need to understand that what's being reported in much of this article is actually very good science. Where he's talking here about demineralizing this bone, this is clearly good science, and he's using high-resolution mass spectrometry. He's looking for distinct proteins. The work that he's doing to find out the structure and the substances here in this material is very, very good science, and it's very exciting to see, therefore, this science being published. It's simply the interpretation that I have a problem with. Everything about this article says good science, apart from their interpretation. And it's just a shame that they can't really look at the consequences of their interpretation. So they're looking at that. And here's an interesting paragraph then immediately afterwards. It says that the researchers confirmed their results by performing the same process with bones from modern archosaurs, such as the chicken and ostrich. Now that bit so far, I've missed out part of the sentence, but this bit so far, that's good science. It would make sense. These creatures are presumably have similar blood structure. They're all going to be vertebrates. So from that point of view, it's perfectly fair to be looking at chicken and ostrich blood and doing the same sort of experiments to confirm that you're getting the same sort of results. Perfectly good science. It's the clause here that's interesting. At the end of that sentence, if I read the full sentence now, you'll see what I mean. It says, the researchers confirmed their results by performing the same process with bones from modern archosaurs, such as chicken and ostrich, which are living relatives of the dinosaurs. Now, there's a piece of worldview bias, because immediately they're assuming that the chicken and the ostrich have to be living relatives of the dinosaurs. Now, there's no reason to assume that. We can assume similar body chemistry because they're in the same world. They're designed by the same designer. So we can assume similar body chemistry without assuming that there is an actual lineal relationship between these creatures. That lineal relationship doesn't exist. I don't have a problem in saying there's going to be similarities in blood chemistry between humans, chimpanzees, pigs, and any other creatures, and indeed with non-mammals, there's going to be similarities in blood chemistry. That's perfectly logical, and it's what we expect from our starting point, which is a biblical starting point. We're not assuming that there is a relationship, but we're assuming that they're designed by the same God. And therefore, there's going to be that economy of design. They're living in this, in the same world, using the same sort of chemical techniques for developing, for digesting food, the same sort of processes. There's bound to be similarities, therefore, in the chemistry. And it doesn't, therefore, assume a relationship to actually say this is the case. So the article goes on to report about how they have decided that these proteins and things really are there. They really are there. They really are proteins. That's really good science. That's really good science. But it's then the interpretation that's a problem. Now, read this bit of interpretation. If you look at my printout of the article, we're on the left-hand side, down towards the bottom of the page. And Cleland is saying this, that this, his experiments, will provide new avenues for pursuing questions regarding the evolutionary relationships of extinct organisms and will identify significant protein modifications and when they might have arisen in these lineages. You see the point that's being made. Really, the conclusion ought to be, these are real blood vessels, they can't have lasted millions of years, therefore there is a problem in our assumption that these organisms have evolved and the timeline that we've developed showing the lineages of these supposed evolutionary processes. Instead, they're going to keep those existing lineages and they're going to fit things into them. They're going to put things in and force the evidence to fit the model that they already have. Now, this is shown by the postdoctoral researcher that I mentioned earlier, this particular young lady who was, you know, I suppose we can excuse her because she's clearly going to be younger, I would assume. It doesn't give her age, but if she's a postdoctoral researcher, I'm going to assume she's in her mid to late 20s maybe, and she says it requires us to think about how to support our conclusions from different angles. So it's not a question about the evidence here, it's a question about supporting the conclusions from different angles. The thing that she goes on to say next is good science. She says this project is significant because it shows the power of using multiple experimental methods. Good for her, this is a very carefully done set of experiments. And it's quite clear that the experimental work that's been done here to identify these proteins is very, very sophisticated and extremely well done. It's this phrase, it requires us to think about how to support our conclusions from different angles. You know, there's a possible angle that they really should be using, an obvious angle on the interpretation of these results that they're deliberately not taking because it just cannot fit with their particular worldview. Now, Dr. Schweitzer, commenting on this particular research, and she's the lady, remember, who studied the original Tyrannosaurus bones, she says, part of the value of this research is that it gives us insight into how proteins can modify and change over 80 million years. No, it doesn't. You see, it doesn't do that because she's not researched how proteins change over 80 million years. She hasn't got a time machine. She hasn't taken samples at different ages along that way to see how they change. She hasn't even taken samples of different fossils that she believes are at different levels of evolution from these hadrosaurs over that the supposed evolutionary age of 80 million years. This is not what has been done there. And therefore, to say that the research gives insight into how proteins modify and change over 80 million years is wrong. Instead, what we're looking at here is how proteins do not change, do not modify, and therefore the aging process, the age of 80 million years previously thought for this dinosaur, must be wrong. That's the obvious conclusion drawn from the very sophisticated experimental research that's been done here. And again, she goes on to say, it tells us not only about how tissues preserve over time, but gives us the possibility of looking at how these animals adapted to their environments while they were alive. Once again, that is not what the experiment is doing. The experiment is looking at how that these blood vessels contain proteins, and that these proteins are remarkably similar to creatures that live today. The conclusion would seem obvious to me that this is because dinosaurs have been around in comparatively recent times. And it's perfectly possible that there may even be some dinosaurs still around. Personally, you know, you may have heard me say this before, I don't think so. I think if there were any dinosaurs still alive, I think they'd have popped up, but it is possible. I can't prove that they're not because I haven't been everywhere in the world. So although I'm one of these sceptical creationists who's not really that keen on the whole subject of cryptozoology and the idea of dinosaurs still wandering around, I can't close my mind to it. It may be possible. And within my worldview, it's not, you know, it would be possible. I can say, you see, quite justifiably, it seems to me that dinosaurs are extinct. Now, if somebody finds one and invites me to have a look at it in the cage, it's not going to rock my worldview because that's perfectly valid in my world. In my worldview, there must have been human beings even up to as recently as a couple of hundred years ago who saw dinosaurs. This is why we have the legends of dragons and so on. It's perfectly likely, it's perfectly possible. It doesn't have a problem, but you see, for an evolutionist, it is a problem. And for an evolutionist, this whole subject of soft tissue being preserved in these sort of fossils is a major problem. And it's why we have to have articles like this that are trying to make out that there is some process that they've discovered that enables these things to still be present. There is no process. Read the article carefully. You'll see that what they've done is good science in the present on the blood vessels that they currently have and comparing them with other blood vessels that they currently have. It says nothing about the age of the dinosaurs. This interpretation comes in because of their a priori commitment to deep time, millions of years. And there's nothing in this particular experimentation that gives that. Far better to interpret this science through biblical glasses, that we expect this to be the case because we know that dinosaurs and people were around at the same time, because dinosaurs were created on day six. They're land animals, they must have been created on day six, the same as people. There must have been occasions when they've been around at the same time. So, if, as I suspect, they've died out today, that's a fairly recent phenomenon, and there is no problem in doing blood chemistry on these creatures. We expect the blood chemistry to be the same because we know that these are basically contemporary creatures. There is no evolutionary process involved here. We're simply looking at different creatures, some of which appear to be extinct, and comparing those with creatures that are around today. Good science, so long as we don't actually push it to the conclusion. The conclusion, as I say, being wrong. This is sound logic, but it's based on faulty premise. Okay? Many times we start with premises that are perfectly sound and we get a lack of logic involved. But this is a different sort of criticism. This is sound logic based on a faulty premise. And if you have a faulty premise, it doesn't matter how sound the logic is going to be, your conclusion is going to be wrong. Supposing someone had a premise that said 2 times 2 is 5, and then they said, well, in that case then 2 times 4 is 10. Now, because they've started with the premise that 2 times 2 is 5, there is a logic then in saying 2 times 4 is 10. You can see that that follows logically because 4 is twice 2, so the answer therefore must be twice. It follows a logic, but their premise in the first place was faulty. That's what we've got here. Sound logic as they work through this this extremely good piece of science, but the conclusion they come to is faulty because one of the premises that they start with is faulty. Well, before I go, I want to give you some news about the Mount St. Helens Creation Centre.org. I had posted on our website some weeks ago about the new postal address for the ministry, and that's a P.O. Box address, which I'd like you to use, please, in future. It's P.O. Box 7. It's the Mount St. Helens Creation Centre, P.O. Box 7, Tootle, that's T-O-U-T-L-E, Washington State, that's W-A-98649. So that's the new postal address for the Mount St. Helens Creation Centre. And the main news to go with that really is that the premises are moving. We're moving out of our current premises. We'll be moved out of our current premises completely by January the 31st. And by the way, if you need to send packages to us, we do have a fixed mailing address, which is 5035, let me get that right, 5035 Spirit Lake Highway, Toodle, Washington 98649. That's 5035 Spirit Lake Highway, Toodle, Washington 98649. So that's the fixed address if you need to get hold of us. Now, the reasons for this are, you know, we're trying to expand what we're doing as a ministry, and we may need to operate the ministry for a little while without premises, but we're also looking at finding new premises. So we would ask for your prayers and particularly for your financial support, because we really need to move into somewhere bigger in order to be able to further the ministry that we have. Which is, we had a very successful summer this year, hugely successful summer. We had a lot of people through our centre, and we just want to be able to serve people in the same way more and more frequently. So please think about our ministry, and you can contact us through the website, and you can give through the website. There's a donation button on the website, and we particularly need regular givers. And we're looking at developing our programs for the next year, for next summer, as we try and do excursions. And the excursions are expensive, you know, and for those people who are able to give significant donations to us, we'll maybe be able to try and give some sort of a pass for you to be able to get onto some of our excursions during the summer. I haven't got all the details of that worked out yet, but please watch this space, and please do have a look at our website to find out ways that you can pray for us and ways that you can support us. This is a very positive move. We really outgrown where we are. We need to be able to do bigger and better things, really. And we just believe that God is moving us out of where we are at the moment and looking for somewhere significantly better to be able to operate the ministry from. So that's the main news that there is at the moment. This program will continue to be recorded and broadcast through the internet, so please make sure that your podcasting software is up to date and you find out what we're doing. We'd love to be able to serve you through this podcast, and if you want to ask us questions, then please do send an email to us. The email address is info@mshcreationcenter.org, info@mshcreationcenter.org. Send us an email, and we will try and answer that on this particular program. For now, thank you for listening. As I said, keep your podcast software up to date so that you're aware of when the next edition of The Mountain and the Word becomes available. And keep in touch. God bless you.
Was The Mountain and the Word, an audio podcast show from the Mount St. Helens Creation Centre. For more information, visit our website, mshcreationcentre.org.